Thank you, everyone, for joining us. It's a sunny evening, so I'm really especially honored that you're choosing to spend this time with me this evening. So I'm Suzanne Bonamici, and I'm honored to represent the 1st Congressional District of Oregon, which is the northwest part of the state. It includes all of Clatsop County, Columbia County, Washington County, Yamhill County, and part of Multnomah County. This is my 6th town hall meeting of the spring. I do 6 in the spring and 6 in the fall. So again, thank you for being here. Active and engaged constituents really help inform my work in Washington, D.C. I wanted to recognize, first of all, I want to let everyone know that Coast Community Radio is recording. I just don't want people to be recorded and not know that. So Coast Community Radio is recording. And we have several elected officials who are joining us. Commissioner Sullivan is here. Raise your hand. Commissioner Thompson is here, our Clatsop County Commissioners. Mayor Balensiffer from Warrenton is here. Where's the mayor? Okay, he's up there. Also, we have Paulina Cockrum and Carrie Smith from city councilors from Gearhart who are here. Raise your hands. Are they still here? Okay, well, they were here. So, well, thank you so much for joining us. I want to recognize my staff. I couldn't do what I do without my amazing staff. I have Rachel here from Washington, D.C. Raise your hand, Rachel. Sarah, Allie, Felicia, and Ryan are all here. Raise your hands. And I also have to acknowledge my former staff, Adrian Anderson and his wife, Mo, who are here. Adrian did amazing, former, grew up in Cannon Beach, a former teacher from Seaside High School, did amazing work on education, then decided to go to law school. So we're glad you're joining us on his spring break. So what I want to do is start by telling you some of the things that people have been contacting me about recently. We've been getting 2 to 3 times as much input from constituents through emails, visits, phone calls, and over the last couple of weeks, the top issues have been gun violence, Dreamers, and immigration reform, the Mueller investigation, and net neutrality. So those are the top issues that people have been writing and calling about recently, although obviously a lot of other issues as well. And so some of the things that I've been working on as your representative is really, I look at my work as being a voice for people in this district, being their voice in Washington, D.C., and in the big picture, how do I create a better future? Because too many people are wondering, how can I save for my kids to go to college and save for retirement? How can I get a better job? How can I get the skills I need to get a better job? How can we have a better future? Access to affordable health care. Workplace policies like equal pay for equal work, which still is not the case in too many communities. I spend a lot of my work on education issues, everything from early childhood education, K-12, kindergarten through 12 education, making sure that's well-rounded education, college affordability. I think back when I went to school, I started at community college and went to community college for 2 years, working my way through, and then decided I wanted to go to law school, and they wouldn't let me in without a bachelor's degree, so then I did another 2 years at the university, and then 3 years of law school, 7 years working and getting loans and work study and grants, and I had a very manageable amount of student loans, and that's not what I'm hearing from too many families today. So college affordability, supporting our seniors and the vulnerable. I had a large role in helping to pass the Older Americans Act, which is our federal policy that helps with senior community centers, Meals on Wheels, and other programs that help our seniors live their lives in dignity. And then I wanted to mention as well a couple of things recently, and I mentioned gun violence, and I want to recognize Keegan and Isabel, who are students here at Astoria High School. They just gave me this large stack of letters that they got signatures on from their classmates and their teachers about the need to keep students safe in school. It's a really critical issue that I'm dedicated to working on. We know that there's more that Congress can do to make sure our students and our community members are safe. in schools, in places of worship, in concert venues, in shopping malls. Look forward to hearing from you and working with you on that. Our student leaders have been tremendously inspiring. I got to meet five of the Florida students from Parkland, Florida. And I tell you, they are, even though they were shaken to their core by what happened to them, they're speaking up and making a difference. The opioid crisis is something that is devastating families and communities across Oregon and across the country. And I have had several listening sessions, including here in Clatsop County. I had five listening sessions based on geography, but then I had one specifically about students and young people. The statistics are pretty staggering. I don't know if Carrie Strickland is here, but many of you know Carrie, whose son Jordan had a sports injury in high school, started taking opioids, and struggled with addiction for several years before he lost his life. And now Jordan's Hope is the organization that Carrie's working on to try to make sure that nobody else has to go through that horrible situation of losing a family member. So we've been working on that issue. And then the current administration, I don't really know where to start, because so many people are so concerned about many, many issues. Today we found out the Secretary of Veterans Affairs has been ousted, and so now people are very concerned about who's going to be running the Veterans Administration, because our veterans deserve the best care when they come back. And so we want to make sure that they're good people there. People are very worried about the conflicts of interest with the investments in all the properties. And, of course, the Mueller investigation and what's happening with interference in the election. So I've been also concerned about the tax bill that passed, which was unfortunately very partisan. We could have done tax reform in a very bipartisan way had we taken the time and worked across the aisle and worked together. We could have done tax reform in a way that closed more loopholes rather than created more loopholes. And unfortunately, most of the benefits of this tax bill go to those at the very top. And it's creating significant debt. So now there's talk about, well, now maybe we need to cut Medicare and Social Security, which are earned benefits that help people live their lives with dignity. So despite the challenges, I've been working hard and have earned a couple of leadership positions, both on the Education Committee, where I've been a leader in leaving behind No Child Left Behind and supporting more well-rounded education, and working on college affordability with a proposal to update work study and get more students into income-driven repayment, so their repayment's based on their income. And I've been recognized as a leader on the Science Committee, where I am the top Democrat on the Environment Subcommittee. I'm also co-chairing the Oceans Caucus this year. That is a bipartisan caucus where we're working on issues like marine debris, ocean acidification, and harmful algal blooms, all affecting our waterways and our economy as well as our environment. So before I start taking questions, a couple of things. One is that I have in my office wonderful staff who work on constituent cases, like individual cases if you are having challenges with a federal agency, whether it be the IRS or immigration or Social Security or Veterans Affairs. So please don't hesitate to reach out to my office if you or your neighbors are trying to navigate one of the federal agencies. We do have people who are there to help. And even though we can't make guarantees, sometimes when we get involved, we can really help navigate that process. So you should have received postcards, and on those postcards you can leave comments and questions. If I don't get to your question, or if you would prefer to submit your question in writing, please do that and sign up for my email newsletter, which we do about monthly. We try to keep it readable and fairly short, with links if you want to read more, and that just lets you know what I'm working on. And then finally, if I start with the tickets, which Ryan and Felicia are bringing down, I do the this, just so I can pull the tickets randomly. If you don't want to ask a question, just say pass. But I'm going to read a couple numbers at a time because we have one microphone. So if you can come to this microphone, unless you think you can project your voice. So I'm going to read the whole number, and I'll read the first two. And then if you want to, if you speak softly, please come to the microphone. If you can project your voice, please feel free to stand up and say your question. So the first one is 843-8702. And the second one is 672-6807. Okay, any takers on either of those? Okay, are you 843 or 672?
807 is the last number.
Okay, you're the 672. Terrific. Welcome.
I was curious. I looked at your website just today, and you were talking about the assault weapons ban on there. I was curious about how you're defining an assault weapon.
Yeah, I'm not myself defining assault weapon. What I think we should do is look at the assault weapons ban that was in effect for 10 years and look at that and study it and figure out if that's something that's going to keep our communities safer. So, of course, there are issues with defining that in the legislation, but what I want to do is hear from the community because we know that people are not feeling safe in their communities. We know I spoke with a student in Beaverton who said the first thing she does when she walks into a classroom is figure out where to hide and how to escape. And that's...
Why do you think that's different today than it was when I was going to school and I could bring a rifle to school and nobody had mass shootings back then?
That's what we have to figure out, and I'm happy to report that the Centers for Disease Control can now research gun violence as a public health issue.
Do you think it might be the fact that every school shooter has been on psychotropic drugs?
That's something that we have to look at what's happening with these schools, who they are and why they're going back. They are students who went to school at those schools. So absolutely we need to figure out why we're having school shootings, but that we also have a shooting at a concert venue in Las Vegas and a shooting at a theater in Colorado and a shooting at a church in Texas. So getting the research is going to be a help, and looking at ways that we can reduce and prevent gun violence is important to our community.
Just as a logic point of view, obviously Chicago has tons of gun laws, and yet it has the highest murder and gun violence rate in the United States.
Yeah, well, we're not going to debate, but I do.
I know, but how does
I'm going to move on to the next one. But as I'm doing that, I'm going to point out that we need universal background checks because they don't have those in many of the states, and that makes a difference. So the next one is 843-8709. Anybody? Okay, the next one is 843-8710. Yeah, yes, please, yeah. And then the next one after this is 843-8705. After this. Hi, welcome.
Welcome. Do you want my name or just...
If that's up to you.
So I'm sorry, I wasn't really prepared. I didn't know we'd get to ask questions. But a concern I've had, so I just want you to tell me if it's legitimate, why or why not. So I'm a health insurance agent, and I also do Medicaid. And so the Medicaid request from the federal government keeps increasing by Oregon, my impression. Oregon legislators keep asking for more Medicaid funds. And then when I've looked about how high the state is on our financial dependence on the federal government, we're pretty high. And again, I should have looked today, but we were like 8 or 9 last time I looked out of 50 financially dependent on the federal government already. And then my impression is legislators are asking for more federal funding for Medicaid, which is the Oregon Health Plan.
Yep. So what the state legislators are asking for is something that you should discuss with the state senator and representative. However, at the federal level, I do know that access to health care is really important to the people I represent. The Affordable Care Act passed before my time in Congress. It was a start, but instead of sitting around the table and figuring out how we can improve it, there have been effort after effort after effort to repeal it, which would take health care away from people. So we know that that didn't happen because people spoke up across the country and they want better access to health care, not less access to health care. So the relationship between what the state is asking for and what the federal government has is a connection, but it's the state that decides how they're going to spend it. Did that not answer your question?
So what I'm wondering, so it's not your impression that the legislators are asking for more funding for the decisions they're making in Oregon from the federal government? They're not asking for more funding from the federal government for decisions they're making in Oregon. Is that correct?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but we can certainly follow up. I know that Oregon has, of course, expanded Medicaid. We have some great things happening at our coordinated care organizations, and they are really a model of that, of coordinating care, because now when people can go and get dental care, vision care, health care, mental health care, it's a much more effective and efficient way to provide health care. So Oregon is a state that did Medicaid expansion. They were one of the leaders in that, in expanding access to health care. But what's happening at the federal level is there have been attempts to repeal it. I think we all need to have conversations as a community about how we can expand access to affordable health care, because there are still many people who can't afford health care. The tax bill that just passed, because it repeals the requirement that people have health care, will actually shift cost to more people. They'll pay higher costs for insurance because the pool will be older and sicker. So I'd love to have a conversation about how we can improve access to affordable health care, because we still have work to do, but taking away access to health care is the wrong direction. The next one, did anybody have 843-8705? Okay, the next one is 689-7552. And while you're coming up, the next one after that is 672-6563.
I'm afraid I typed this up because I was afraid I was going to fumble around about it otherwise.
No worries.
Should we embrace a strategy of single issue voting at any given even year, in other words, House of Representatives election, with a new issue each time? For example, if the issue for one election were gun safety, we could make the absolute condition for supporting a candidate their support for amending the Second Amendment to read something like, "The right of the people to keep and bear arms as members of a well-regulated militia shall not be infringed." The condition for another election could be support for an amendment limiting the amount a candidate can spend per constituent, and so forth. I think that there's been a lot of single-issue politics on the right, and that it's something that the left, or the the left of center, at least, should consider.
That's certainly an intriguing idea, but I think that people have the issues that they care about, and that's how they decide what's important to them. Some people might care more about gun violence prevention than they do about investing in infrastructure. Some people might want to support somebody whose passion is education, and others might want to support somebody because they care about foreign policy. So picking one issue and saying that's what an election should be about, I think is going to be, that wouldn't reflect, I think, the diversity of the population that we have, not only here in the First District of Oregon, but across the country.
I'm not going to be argumentative, but I try not. I thought about that, and it occurred to me that if you get somebody who you elect on that issue, they're more likely to be somebody who will support you on the other issues that you believe in. Maybe not.
Did anybody have the next number, 672-6563? Keegan.
So as at a student level, I'm wondering, sitting in this room just alone makes me wonder, how do we as students help to fix the large standing divisions between the right and the left, and how do we make people come together at more of a center point rather than sitting and yelling at each other from across the room?
Thank you, Keegan. I really appreciate that question. And a lot of that, and from a high school student, see, gives you hope for the future, right? A lot of that deals with listening and listening to people with different perspectives. That's why I like to come out into the community and hear from folks I represent. Like I mentioned, this is the sixth town hall meeting I've had just this spring. And when we learn how to listen to people from different perspectives, we can understand that typically we have more in common than we do different. And that's what I found as a member of Congress, because I work with people. You know, I'm here from Oregon, and I happen to be a Democrat, but I don't really care if there's a good idea, whose idea it is. I want to know if it's something that is good for the people I represent. I've worked with some very conservative representatives, and I find that you know, there's 435 of us, and as I get to know people, and of course every 2 years people leave and people come and go, but I have found in my now more than 6 years in Congress that if you get to know people, you quickly learn that you have more in common than where you differ. Everybody wants basically the same thing. People want good jobs. They want good schools. They want clean air and clean water. They want a safe and secure country. They have different ideas about how you accomplish those things. And importantly, they have different ideas about the role of government in accomplishing those things. But when you start with the understanding that everybody wants the same thing, you find a place where you can work together. So, for example, I have a bipartisan bill called the Partners Act to get more apprenticeships in small and medium-sized businesses. And I'm working with a Congressman Drew Ferguson from Georgia. And he told me, he said, I don't have very much in common. Your district and mine aren't very much alike. But we know that people need good jobs. And oftentimes getting into an apprenticeship can lead to that job. So we have this bipartisan legislation that we're working on together. Do I agree with him on everything? No, I don't agree with every Democrat on everything either. But we try to find common ground and figure out what we can do that's best for our constituents and people we represent. But I think the need to have respectful disagreement is important too. I'm not the kind of person who's going to scream at people who don't agree with me, and I think we have to say I respectfully might disagree with people. I represent at one-fifth of the state of Oregon. I assure you that I cannot make 100% of the people in this district happy, but I want to listen to them and find places where we can agree. But thank you for your comment and your leadership. 672-6808. Anybody? And then after that's going to be 689-7508. Hello, welcome.
Hello. I have a written statement to help me remember what to say. My name's Ken Adams.
Hi, Ken.
I live in Astoria. You are pushing citizenship for so-called dreamers, but don't care what caused these young people to be in the country illegally in the first place. Their parents brought them here while seeking to work here illegally. We'll be in this situation again unless we make it hard for employers to hire unlawful workers. That's why I would like you to support mandatory E-Verify workplace eligibility checks for all employers. Don't subject another generation of young people to the same situation they're in now. And I would request that you don't respond with standard talking points about how our immigration system is broken, which I don't feel it is, and that E-Verify is not reliable, because it is reliable. And if our country could, if I could go into a store and buy something for $5,000 with a little Visa card, I believe that E-Verify could be made reliable and is reliable now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. You told me not to respond with standard talking points, so I'm going to tell you what from my role as a representative and from my looking at the issues and talking to people here in Northwest Oregon, I'm going to tell you what I support and why. The people who are here who are dreamers are people who were brought to this country as infants and children. They did not make the decision to come here. They only know this country. They were raised here. They've worked hard. Miriam Vargas Corona, for example, from Yamhill County, has spent 26 and a half of her 27 years here. And she's worked hard. She stayed out of trouble. She went to school. She got a good job. She graduated from college. She's contributing to the community and the economy. She's married to a U.S. citizen and has a child who has a U.S. citizen. I think it's ripping apart a family to take somebody like Miriam and send her back to a country she does not know. To resolve this, we absolutely need to have comprehensive immigration reform. And if you talk to people who, and immigration reform is something that the majority of the people in this district I represent want, from the high-tech companies who say, why can somebody come here and get an engineering degree and then have to go back to a country that work for a company that's competing with us, or people in agriculture communities who say, we aren't going to have a workforce if we don't have immigration reform. So I support comprehensive immigration reform, and because it's the right and moral thing to do, I support making sure that Dreamers can stay here and earn. I still have concerns about the use of E-Verify until we have comprehensive immigration reform and assurances that it works well. Okay, six, eight, nine. The people who are not citizens cannot vote. 6789-7508. Hi. The next one after this is 6728.
Hello. I consider Oregon a fairly progressive state, and our leaders progressive thinkers. What I want to know is, I don't think the Trump administration has a lot of appreciation for Oregon, and I'd like to know what measures we are going to be taking to protect the burgeoning marijuana industry and to protect the environment that we have here, because I don't think we're going to be getting much help from our feds anymore.
Well, I'll answer those I'll answer them in that order. The voters have spoken. The people in the cannabis industry are working, contributing to the economy where it is taxed and regulated. That's what the voters decided. We have the infrastructure in this state to tax and regulate. The problem is the federal government needs to take it off of Schedule 1 so that these industries can bank and be safe, because right now it's a cash industry, and that's very, very unsafe. So there has been bipartisan support for removing those restrictions and letting the state tax and regulate. We just haven't been able to get that passed. And, of course, in this administration, they don't seem to have any interest in changing that, in large part because of Attorney General Sessions and his priorities. So each U.S. attorney is making statements about what their priorities will be. I know many of us in Oregon have spoken up and said, please let this industry be taxed and regulated. That's what the voters decided. That's a states' rights issue as well, but I'm really concerned about the cash part of it, because that's a security issue and a safety issue. With regard to protecting the environment, that's critical for Oregon, and we've seen the effects of climate change, from ocean acidification that's affecting our shellfish industry and our fisheries industry. Our outdoor recreation industry is being affected. I represent Yamhill County. They just doubled their economic impact of the wine industry. If it gets too warm, that's going to be affected as well. So we do have a bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus of members of Congress who understand that humans contribute to climate change, and we need to be investing more in renewable energy technologies. I know that many of us have spoken out about the problems of drilling off the shore of Oregon. Interior Secretary Zinke, I think, is getting the message that when we drill, we spill. And with this, of course, being on the Cascadia subduction zone, that would be very problematic. So we're seeing more conversations about climate change as an economic issue and also as a national security issue. So please know that many of us, and there are bipartisan voices speaking up for protecting the environment. And we know, looking at here in Oregon, we can grow the economy and protect the environment. They're not mutually exclusive. Did anybody have 672-6728? Okay, the next one is 672-6823. 672-6823. Nope. Okay, the next one is 672-6822. 672-6822. Okay. The next one after that, 672-6806. 672-6806. Oh, how about, oh, got one. Thank you.
So I want to know if you will support term limits for all of Congress.
The question was about term limits. I don't support term limits. I didn't support them at the state level either, because every 2 years there's an election, and if people don't like the job we're doing, they can vote us out of office. The problem with term limits is that they put artificial limits, and then you end up with people without experience doing a job that should be done by people with experience. So in Oregon, they were thrown out by the courts, but I don't support them because every 2 years, if people don't like what I'm doing, they can vote me out. So
I will.
Same thing with 843-8706. 843-8706. And then the next one after that is 672-6733. 672-6733.
I want to thank you for the No Child Left Behind Act. I organized with the Ruckus Society and United for Peace and Justice when that was initiated, so I'm glad you're still working to dissolve that. And I came here, I didn't really realize it was like a, well, I was invited by the March for Your Lives, and I've always been a big supporter of the Second Amendment right, but I feel like we've woken up in America, and our kids cannot go to school safe, and just figure it out, keep doing what you're doing, and I think it's going to happen, it has to happen. You can leave your guns at home. We need books, not guns. And that's what I got to say.
I appreciate that. And there are so many things that we can do that are consistent with Second Amendment rights. And with regard to leaving behind No Child Left Behind, that was a proud moment to be able to pass the Every Student Succeeds Act. I again want to acknowledge Adrian, who was on my staff at the time and worked hard on that legislation. And what it does is takes the focus off of punishing students for not getting, or schools for not getting good test scores. It means more well-rounded education, fewer better quality assessments of students, and more local decision-making. So I was proud of that work. I think it's going to result in better education, more engaging education for our students in Oregon and across the country. So thank you. Hello. You're the next number?
Yes, ma'am.
Terrific. And after that is 672-6733.
That's me.
Oh, yours. Okay. Okay. So let me just read the next number so the next person can get ready. 843-8711. Hello. Welcome.
My name is Seamus.
And, hi, Seamus.
I've been working in addictions for a little over a decade now. And over that time and beyond, I've seen too many people affected by opioids, amongst other drugs that they really just should not be having to deal with. Given that the current regime occupying the White House is making few, if any, meaningful policies to address it, let alone actual actions, mm-hmm. What is Congress doing?
Thank you, and thank you for your work. It's really critical, and I mentioned I had 7 listening sessions across Northwest Oregon and talked to too many families and people who have been devastated. And at each listening session, people in recovery have joined us and told their stories. And it's a really important voice. I'll tell you what doesn't work, and that's the just say no deterrent policy that the president is proposing. Nor will it work to say we're going to give the death penalty to drug traffickers. That's not the answer. We need to look at evidence-based prevention programs. We need to work with our healthcare providers on prescription practices, which are actually improving in this state, but still, if you took the total number of opioids that were prescribed in Oregon last year, everybody in the state, men, women, and children, would have received 55 pills. It's on a downward trend, though, as providers are educated about new practices. I talked to some of my colleagues who were in medical school, they're doctors, but they were, you know, when they were in medical school, they were told, look, you can get rid of people's pain, 100% pain-free, and they can take these drugs, and they're totally safe. And so we're realizing now, of course, that isn't the case. We need to be looking at what the pharmaceutical companies did, because because there is some responsibility with them. But we also have to make sure that people can get access to detox and recovery and treatment, because there's not enough. When I was in Columbia County, for example, a woman got into detox, and then she said, I'm ready to go into treatment now, and they said, come back in 3 weeks. And that just doesn't work. So making sure that people have access to treatment and they can get there, and getting rid of the stigma. This is a crisis that is affecting people of all backgrounds, of all races, of all ages, of all income brackets, and across the state and across the country. So getting rid of the stigma and making sure that people can seek treatment and get treatment. We're seeing some really good developments. I heard this story in Yamhill County about a gentleman who had to take the train and then the MAX and commute for like 4 to 5 hours to get to a methadone clinic, and now he's taking a much more effective drug that allows him to work, stay at home and work. And we're seeing advances there with some of the treatment options. We also need to make disposal easier, because when people are prescribed opioids, oftentimes they don't know what to do with what's left over. And it's not okay to flush them or to put them in the water supply. And if they're just sitting in cabinets, then kids can get a hold of them and they have a market value. So we need to make it easier for people to dispose of unused opioids. So those are all pieces. We're putting together some proposals, but we really need the evidence-based programs and not just to just say no. So did anybody have 843-8711? Did anybody have that number? 843-8708. We'll have to chat after, because I'm trying to get to as many questions as I can. 843-8708. Hello. I can hear you.
I appreciate your work with the science committees and keeping our beaches clean. And I just wondered the status of offshore drilling.
Yeah, when we heard a proposal from the Interior Department to open up offshore drilling, we heard pretty overwhelmingly from, well, first of all, the Interior Secretary gave an exception to Florida because of tourism, and we heard a pretty overwhelming cry from people here in Northwest Oregon that we'd be very concerned about offshore drilling. It's also my understanding that it wouldn't be very fruitful to drill offshore here off the coast of Oregon, but with our Cascadia subduction zone, I think it's a very bad idea, and I know I will be fighting that. We have to be looking at investing in renewable energy technologies and not drilling offshore, especially in a place like off the Oregon coast. Did anybody have 843-8708? Was that you? Okay. 672-6732. I'm going to try to get to as many of these as possible. 672-6732. How about 672-6729? 672-6729. Okay, the next one is 672-6731. 672-6731. Hello.
Thanks for coming, Congresswoman. My name is Sonny Park. I'm a medical practitioner here for 25 years.
Thank you for joining us.
As we all know, more and more people are developing mental health issues here. More and more people are developing depression, bipolar disorders, substance abuse, domestic violence. But as a doctor practicing in a small town, we have no place to send any mental patient to anywhere in the States. There's no mental hospitals.
Right.
Is there any other fundings or measures or initial movements in federal levels to build a mental hospital, at least one in each state?
We are having the conversation about in Congress, and the question was about the lack of access to mental health care and places for people to go. We, years ago in this country, moved from institutionalization to community-based mental health care, which for the most part is better for the patient and the family. However, if it's not funded and we don't have that access, that's problematic. So, of course, we're looking at options of how do we fund health. Mental health care is part of health care. How do we make sure that those options are available, especially in rural areas? And I hear this again and again, that somebody will come in with mental health care. There's no place for them to go. There's no place to send them. So whether it's moving back to institutionalization or really truly funding community-based mental health care, we know it's an issue that we have to step up and deal with, because it's a big gap in our healthcare system right now. So thank you for your work. Be interested in following up with you after about your thoughts on what's the best way of providing care.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Yeah, we can get together after. Did anybody have, were you 689-7550, anybody? Oh, great. 68. And then after this is 843-8701.
Hi. I'm Amy Baker. I'm the executive director for Clatsop Behavioral Healthcare.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate how challenging your job is to field all sorts of different perspectives and come forward with an answer that's honest and fair.
Thank you.
So I guess what I want to say about behavioral health is obviously that it's complicated, that it's true. It's not funded in the same way that medical services
Correct.
Are. The budget for behavioral health is fractional compared to medical services. I also want to say that often in communities, what we are seeking is to actually send people away who have behavioral health problems. And the reality is, as a community, we need to accept people, because it's a high, high prevalence. And so it's a mixture of having multiple options for people in community. It's having landlords who are supportive of our clients in the facilities. It's having access to good care. And here's the part where you come in. When you talk about No Child Left Behind and how outdated that is, we still have Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services basically dictating how services are provided based on their payment schedule and the way that rates are set. So basically, I'm sure you're familiar with this, you have SAMHSA,
right. CMS,
and mm-hmm. you have CMS.
Right.
And CMS essentially is running the system in terms of how payment's made, and it's outdated and it doesn't work. Like, CMS has to be overhauled, especially when it comes to behavioral health. Otherwise, you're never going to see good outcomes.
Right. Thank you. And I look forward to, we can follow up afterward and get your ideas on that, because it is critical that we fill that gap and make sure that those needs are there. But when you talked about the importance of community-based care, I know that not everyone with behavioral health issues is someone with substance abuse disorders. But when we had a hearing in the Education and Workforce Committee about how substance abuse and the opioid crisis is affecting our workforce. And one of the people who came to testify was from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and she runs what started out as a family business but now is a very successful business. And she said, on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, she said, we hire people who are in recovery. And we have several people on recovery who work at our factory, and they do a great job, and they give support to other people who are in recovery who come here and work. Does it always work out? No, but no employee, you know, you can't always have perfection. Thank you, Ryan. But it was really encouraging to know that that's a company that had that commitment to getting rid of stigma for people in recovery, to making sure that they have a job, because we have to make sure that people who are recovering can go to work. Beaverton Bakery, for example, they were recognized as a champion of change because they hire people with criminal backgrounds. And when we put that on social media, I braced myself for the onslaught of criticism, but people were incredibly supportive and said, good for them. They're giving people a second chance. People have paid their time. So until we can make sure that people who are in recovery, who are trying to get back into the workforce, can have a job and without that stigma, we're not going to break that cycle. But I look. Let's get together and with my staff and get your thoughts on ways to reform CMS to make sure that we're actually getting the health care and the funding we need. I also want to, with regard to higher education, because I work on education issues, want to point out that College affordability is a pretty big part of the lack of providers, and especially in rural areas. And right now, there's a proposal to completely eliminate the public service loan forgiveness program, which is very problematic because people who go into public service right now have this program where they, over a certain number of years of public service, they can have loan forgiveness. That's proposed to be eliminated. We need to make college affordable, and when we need people who are primary care providers, for example, if they can't afford to go to school and through medical school, and if they can't pay back their loans without becoming a high-paying plastic surgeon, they're not going to go into primary care. We're still going to have a workforce issue. So I'm working on college affordability as well. Did we have 843-8701? Anybody? Hello. Hi, Eric. You're welcome. It's important for me to do. I fully support the investigation, and I do know that Bob Mueller has broad bipartisan support on both sides of the aisle for his dedication, for the quality of his work, and for the work that he is doing. Yes, there is concern, and I think that there are members on both sides of the aisle that are concerned that there will be attempts to fire him. I'm old enough to remember the Saturday Night Massacre. So what will happen, I just can't predict. I know there are bills pending to try to avoid that, but I don't think they will pass it this time. So just speaking out and saying we need this investigation to be completed. And as one of my Republican colleagues just said, if you don't have anything to hide, stop acting like you have something to hide. And that was Representative Trey Gowdy, who was chairing the Oversight Committee. So there are many of us who are committed to making sure that this investigation, we need to know what happened and what's going on with the interference with the election, but also with all the conflicts of interest. So thank you. I can't predict that. I certainly would speak out and would continue to speak out and to try to work with my colleagues to make sure that there was a remedy to that. Thank you. 6897554. 6897554. 6897554. Anyone? Okay, the next one is 6897553. All right, going once, going twice. Okay, 672-6809. 672-6809. 6809. Hello. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I came in late, so rather than repeat questions, because I see a lot of faces here of people who I know are asking the right questions, and I do follow your reports, I read your letters, I call and I send you letters on a regular basis. So I just want to say thank you for coming, and I appreciate most of what you do.
And thank you.
And we all will stay on top of it with you. So.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to get up there to the festival again sometime soon. 843-8703. All right. The next one is 672-6727. Hello. Yes. Can we have a show? Can we have a show of hands of people who think it's a good idea to have universal health care? Okay. There is a bill, a Medicare for All bill. Obviously, doesn't have much chance of passing right now. But we need to have a conversation about how we can expand access to health care, because we're paying a lot, but we're not getting as much as we are paying for. So. 672-6727, 672-6727. Okay, the next one is 843-8712. Hello. I'll repeat the question. Thank you. And the question has to do with, are there people I can work with on the other side of the aisle, according to my constituent here, when the Democrats are in the majority? I was in the majority when I was in the state legislature. I've been in the minority the whole time I've been in Congress, but my constituents did not elect me to only get things done when I'm serving in the majority. I've been working hard to get things done by forming relationships, and I do that right now. Having served in the majority, I know that it's important to respect minority rights. And so, for example, when I was in the state legislature, I was chairing a committee. My vice chair was a Republican. I spoke with him on a weekly basis about what legislation to bring forward, got his input, even encouraged him to work with me on the legislation. We don't get that right now in Congress. In fact, we get legislation, like the higher education bill. I think the Wall Street Journal had it before the Democrats did. So that's not the way to get things done working together. So I'm committed to working with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, absolutely, because the best legislation is bipartisan. And that's true regardless of who's in the majority. This is a really diverse country. This district is really diverse. You can tell from the conversation here tonight. This district is diverse. This country is diverse. We don't all think alike, so we have to work together to find places where we can agree. And I think that sort of pushing aside the minority. Yes, I'm in the minority now, but I've been in the majority, and I know that the country is better, the constituents are better when we don't do that, when we work together. So I don't need to sacrifice my values to do that. I think what we need to do is find those places, you know, listening to the people we represent who don't have a voice. How can we be their voice and get things done for them? And thank you for your insight on doing things for the next generation. I mean, I don't have any grandkids right now. I really want grandkids, but my kids aren't ready. I have a lovely grandcat, but I think about my grandparents who came. My grandparents came on a boat, you know, through Ellis Island from Italy, and my grandmother couldn't speak English. She didn't have a job. She was not educated. My grandfather was a stonemason in Italy, but he was a coal miner. So he was a coal miner in Pennsylvania until he lost his leg. Yeah, a lot of that generation did. So he lost his leg in the coal mine, and then he went to Ford Motor Company and worked for years and years and years rebricking the ovens for the factory at Ford Motor Company. They raised 5 children, including my dad, and all 5 of their children did better than they did. And my generation, we're doing better than our parents did. Neither of my parents graduated from college. And so we want, every generation thinks our next generation should be better off and should do better. Too many people now are afraid that that's not going to happen. But, right, exactly. There's too much concern about that. And how did we get off that that track of understanding that we're making the world a better place for the next generation. So I keep that in mind as, you know, thinking about my grandparents passed away before I got elected to office, but they would have been pretty proud. I finally got to speak with my grandmother after. She never really even learned English, but she did. She did it, raised amazing kids, had a beautiful garden, and really was proud of being an American. And so was my grandfather, and so were all their kids. 843-8712. 843-8712. Oh, Sarah. All right. 843-8712. Anybody? Okay, the next one is 672-6726. Okay. Oh, I only have a few more. I'm just going to finish them. 843-870. Sorry, Sarah. 843-8704. The next one is 843-8707. Hello. Hi. Nice to see you. Of course. Is that a question? Thank you for your work at Tongue Point Job Corps. I have met so many folks who go through the programs at Job Corps. Both, I have two centers in the district. I'm honored to represent Tongue Point and Pivot in Northwest Portland, really changing lives and helping people who otherwise would not be able to enter the workforce successfully. So thank you for your work. 672-6805. Anybody? 6805. Hello.
Hi. You mentioned the assault weapon ban that was in place, and is there any movement afoot to bring that back in the same form that it was in place before?
There are conversations about whether that should be reinstated, but certainly not in the same form because it would have to be updated. And as the gentleman pointed out earlier, there are definitional challenges and what does that mean. I think we're going to see more progress on things like banning bump stocks or maybe high capacity magazines. But one of the things that I'm pleased to see is the removal of the prohibition on doing research, that the Centers for Disease Control has not been able to do research. So I think that's going to help us identify what's really going to help keep our communities safe. So, of course, there are conversations about lots of different options. What we end up passing, I think, is going to depend on what we hear from the community and what really will keep us safe. And it's going to be certainly a multifaceted approach. Universal background checks would be a really good start. Okay, there's only one more question, 672-6804. Hello. Well, thank you. And certainly making your voice heard and coming to a thing like a town hall, an event like a town hall meeting. How many are at a town hall meeting for the first time? Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. Making your voices be heard and speaking up on issues that you care about. Sometimes people find it meaningful to join a group or an organization that supports an issue that you care about to help you amplify your voice. But with regard to the sort of political control, I think Citizens United was a really bad Supreme Court opinion. And so the fact that there's this unlimited amount of money buying campaigns and spending in campaigns is unacceptable. We need to get back to talking about issues and get the money, the big money out of politics, because it's wrong on all levels. So I want to... I want to say thank you to everyone for coming. If for some reason you have a question that you didn't ask, or if you think of something else and you want to keep in touch with the office, some of my staff will be here for a while. Please pass along your contact information, sign up for my newsletter, and please let me hear from you. Whether you agree with me or not, I want to hear from you. I want to hear your ideas because it does make a difference in the work that I do in Washington, D.C. So thank you, everyone. Happy holidays this weekend. I know it's Passover and Easter, so happy holidays. I hope it's sunny and enjoy the holiday weekend. Thank you, everyone.